Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the Nocilla Gas Podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Apple bias. Today is Sunday, August 26, 2018, and this is show number 694. Before we get started, I'd like to give a little shout out to Janet, who wrote to me for the first time this week after listening to the show since 2005. Isn't that incredible? Anyway, let's see. Next week, the live show that's Labor Day weekend in the United States will not be on Sunday night. It will be on Monday night. It'll still be on 5 p.m. Pacific time, but it will be on Monday, not Sunday in the United States. We have the opportunity to spend the evening with Lindsay, Nolan, Forbes, Kyle, and Nikki. And I got to tell you guys, I love the live audience, but that's tough competition. Anyway, I hope a lot of people could still come make it on Monday. With the NocillaCast, I have self-imposed pressure to never miss a show because I don't want to ruin my 13-year streak. Chit Chat Across the Pond doesn't have to live up to that same pressure, though, which is nice. That allows me to very occasionally miss a show, or in this week's case, publish the shows out of order. I've already recorded the latest Programming by Stealth with Bart, but I'm holding it till early next week so that I can sneak in a time-sensitive episode of Chit Chat Across the Pond Lite. This chit-chat is what could best be described as an accidental episode. Recently, Epic Games announced that they were going to port their insanely popular game Fortnite over to Android. It's currently making around $2 million a day via in-app purchases alone, and that's on iOS only. And, of course, they have to give 30% of that to Apple. Epic figured that they had an opportunity to make even more money if they didn't put Fortnite in the Google Play Store, where Google would take 30% of all the sales they got on Android. Now, unlike the walled garden with iOS, you can do this on Android, but it means your users have to disable certain security features to sideload from unknown sources. I was curious about how this works and is it really as dangerous as it sounds, so I called up my buddy Rob Dunwood of the SMR podcast to ask him how exactly this all works, how you do it on your phone, what is that like, and kind of to try to get his feel for whether this is dangerous. I realized after a few minutes that we were chatting on the phone that this would make a great chit-chat, so we flipped over and recorded on the spot. In the conversation, Rob did a great job of explaining the repercussions and dangers, as well as the protections you'd still have. Now, that discussion with Rob about Fortnite and sideloading became Chit Chat Across the Pond Lite episode 560, which is already published. But then on Friday, Bart and I recorded the security bits, which you'll be hearing later in this episode. Bart had already listened to Rob and my conversation and had some really interesting input on the subject. But then, right after Bart and I finished recording security bits and talking about the Fortnite thing, Rob sent me the news that Google uncovered a pretty major flaw in the official Fortnite installer. According to the article in Android Central, the installer itself, not Fortnite, was easily exploitable. The installer would allow malware that's already on your phone to take over the installer and then download any app it wanted with full permission to your phone. You'd never know that it wasn't installing Fortnite, and you wouldn't get prompted for permissions, such as access to location or the camera, you know, that sort of permission. Now, note that I said this requires you to have already had a malicious app on your phone for this vulnerability to be exploited. But also remember, there have been problems. There have been problematic applications in the Google Play Store in the past. They've made great progress in cleaning that up. But you could have something dormant on your phone that's waiting for this kind of opening. Now, the good news is that Google let Epic know about it and made it public, and Epic has fixed the installer. These two companies are definitely at odds on how this was all handled. Epic CEO has publicly said that they think Google was irresponsible in their public disclosure and that Google should have waited their standard 90 days before disclosing. Google has responded back that since it was a zero-day exploit, it did fit within their policy of making it public after 7 days. Now, Google is incentivized in this case to make Epic look really bad because they left the compound and took their money with them. So Google's losing that 30% of however much this makes on Android. Now, that doesn't mean Google is wrong in pointing this out. Epic wants to make as much money as possible, and, you know, who can blame them? So they're incentivized to blame Google for this. In my view, the greed between these two corporations is putting users at a higher risk. So I think we could easily call this an Epic fail. Now, we've only got one piece of content from me this week beyond everything I've already been yapping about, but we've got a lot of fun and security bits, so let's get started with my one piece of content. As I've mentioned a few times, Steve and I are having our bathrooms gutted and remodeled. It's a really stressful thing to live with. There's workers arriving at random intervals during the day, and of course there are days where we're ready for them and they don't show up, which was almost more stressful. Because of the demo of the downstairs bathroom, laundry room, and entryway tile, they sealed off the front of the house with plastic walls, so it's like living in a Dexter's kill room. Anyway, the stairs going up to the guest bath are covered in plastic stuck to the carpet, so that's a nice feature. We did discover that if any of one of your animals barfs on plastic carpet, it's actually really easy to clean up, though. Speaking of animals, our cats have to live in our bedroom with their cat litter in the master bathtub, and I think that's probably my favorite part of this whole thing. Now, I swear there's going to be a tech angle buried in this story, but the story has to be told to understand the problem I needed to solve. All of this anguish adds up to some pretty severe annoyance, as you can imagine. But things are going to get much, much worse soon. When they're done with the guest bath upstairs, they're going to start in on our master bath. Now, obviously, we won't be able to use the master bath during this time, but it also means that they will have to plastic coat our entire master bedroom as well. The amount of dust they create during demolition is pretty extreme. We had to actually disconnect our smoke detectors. It was so bad when they did it downstairs. Now, let me pull the curtain back on the podcast for a moment here. The members of the live show audience know this, but you might not know that my podcast studio is actually in our master bedroom. We have a giant long room, so my desk and all my monitors and mic stands and lighting and all that is all along one wall, and then I have this nice fireplace behind me for a nice background. If the master is going to be full of dust, there's no way I can keep all of this equipment in its current location. Now, the good news is we have a four-bedroom home with only Steve and me living in it now, and he converted one room to his den with his computer, so on top of that, we have Lindsay's old bedroom set up as a pretty nice guest room, and then there's Kyle's room, or as I like to call it, the room of crap. Obviously, the room of crap will have to become my temporary studio. One of the challenges in life is getting your kids to get their crap out of your house after they grow up and move out. While my children are both perfect angels in every way and never do anything to torture their mother, this has been a bit of a challenge for me. Now, Lindsay would have taken her crap years ago, but she had been living in a 1,001 square foot, two-bedroom house with a 70-pound black lab and a baby and a husband. So I really couldn't in good conscience ask her to take her stuff. Now that she has a giant house, bigger than mine, we packed up her room and we're transferring it all to her now. In fact, we gave her the last of it today. In her case, she asked to keep just about everything she had in her old bedroom. I'm talking like all of her Beanie Babies and its school newspapers and memory boxes. It took us two loads to get it to her. Now let's talk about Kyle in the room of crap. Kyle hasn't taken much of anything with him, and when I asked him to come and deal with it, his answer was, "I'll just throw it all away." Well, I wasn't going to do that. I mean, plus it's his responsibility to deal with it, I think. Now that we finally had a forcing function with my imminent move into his room, we dragged him up here and the three of us emptied his room entirely. Now, just as a side note that has nothing to do with this, he really did throw close to 95% of the stuff away, walking out with a half-filled shoebox and one hand-drawn drawing by my friend John Zellner. I mean, that was it. It was really shocking how little he took out of that room. In fact, we threw away so much stuff, the remote control from the TV has disappeared. Oh, well. Well, once we had all the crap out, we really needed to rearrange the room. Now, I swear the tech angle is coming up soon. We've got a desk, a bed, a tall dresser, and a really, really crappy side table that needs to be burned and thrown away. I mean, the desk is pretty crappy, too, but the dresser is kind of in the middle. Anyway, these things were all arranged in probably the worst way possible when Kyle was young to make a room feel comfortable and useful. You know, feng shui, not harmonized at all in this room. If I was going to work in this room for a month or more, I needed to rearrange it. I had lots of people look at the room to suggest ways to arrange it, but nothing seemed to work. It's this oddly square room, but has one wall that's all sliding glass doors. I don't know. It just didn't work. Finally, our friend Logan suggested a plan that looked like it had promise. But now I need to draw it out to see if things would actually fit. We aren't the kind of people who pick up a bunch of heavy furniture and move around to see if it's going to work. We needed to draw it. Now, being an engineer, you know I had to do this drawing to scale, right? I don't personally understand how anyone does things not to scale. I'll never forget when Lindsay did her mission project in the fourth grade. I think it's a state law. I've heard it's gone now, but every kid has to build a mission in fourth grade. She got an A+ on her fourth grade mission project, and they gave her the plus because the model she built was to scale. I mean, well, how else do you do it? I mean, I don't even understand. I might have been an influence on how her mission was made. But anyway, now, after all of this, this setup here, rearranging this room, I could have used some of the graph paper I have, but I figured there was a more modern technical solution. Now, I was under the impression that there were lots of really cool web services to help you lay out a room, most of which are connected to someone trying to sell you furniture. But that would be fine since, you know, like I said, the desk is pretty bad and the table is way beyond keeping. So I thought it'd be great if you could offer some furniture and I could see how it would look in this room. And I would lay it out and I'd be able to see it in 3D and spin around and see if the feng shui was good. That's what I thought would happen. But for the life of me, I was not able to find a site that would meet my requirements to put in the exact dimensions and then see how the room would look. I did find one site, and I spent a lot of time putting in the dimensions, putting the furniture in very painstakingly. I even chose new side tables from their inventory that I would actually consider buying. But after hours of putting the room together, I found out you couldn't spin the room around to see how it looked. I couldn't even see a nice plan view to measure to see, like, one of the things I want to know is if I put the desk really close to the door, would there be room between the desk chair and the bed or the corner of the desk and the entry to the room? Okay, I figured let's go look at iPad apps. Now, I'm not at all against paying for an app to do this with the threshold, you know, around 10 bucks or so, maybe even higher than that. If it's much more than that, though, I'm pulling out that graph paper. Finding an app for this was much harder than I thought. Again, the room design software I looked at failed to meet my criteria. But then I changed my search to drafting, and I found an app called ArchiSketch. It's A-R-C-H as in architecture, A-R-C-H-I, and then sketch, S-K-E-T-C-H. It's from archisketch.eu. ArchiSketch works on the freemium model, which was great. That's exactly what I needed to be able to see if it would meet my needs before plunking down my hard-earned Huniackers, trademark Kaylee. For free, you could create two drawings in one project, and each project is limited to 40 objects. Luckily, with all of Kyle's stuff out of his room, I didn't have anywhere near 40 objects. And I mean, I was drawing pillows on the bed, too, so I was able to lay out his room with the free portion of the software. Now, the paid version of ArchiSketch is only 13 bucks, so that's really close enough to my price range anyway, but I was able to figure out whether I could use it before giving them any money. By the way, they also have some upgrade packs for other features if you really get into using ArchiSketch. ArchiSketch has a ton of capabilities, but I'm going to narrow it down just to the features that I used. As one would hope, ArchiSketch opens with a graph paper background. If you're alert, as I was not when I started, you'll see the scale on the left-hand side. You should really pay attention to that. I didn't notice it initially, and while I thought I was entering inches, I was actually entering feet. So some of my carefully crafted measurements are a bit of nonsense now that I look closely. Armed with the one thing I wish I'd noticed before, let's start drawing. Across the bottom of the screen are your drawing tools, which through trial and error are pretty easy to figure out. Tapping on the icons at the bottom replaces them with the features of the item that you've selected. For example, the first icon is for text and arrows, while the second icon is to draw shapes. Tapping on the shapes icon replaces all of the bottom icons with options for creating and manipulating shapes. Makes sense, right? You'll find a shape picker with the usual suspects, you know, rectangles, ovals, circles, polygons, and squiggly lines, along with one that's perfect to show an opening door, a triangle, and oddly, the selection rectangle is buried under shapes. Not sure why they buried it in there, and I'm sure I won't remember that, and I'll have to hunt for it each time. Across the bottom, with the shape icon selected, you can change the stroke and fill colors along with the thickness of the stroke, as well as toggle that stroke from solid to dashed. Pretty much the usual suspects. With the shape or shape selected, the bottom right will give you more things to do with the objects you're creating. There's a handy duplicate button, which was very useful for me when I drew my first side table, and I just wanted another one. The next icon is an arrow in a circle, which I thought would be undo, but instead it's a rotate button. Once you know that, it makes perfect sense. If you click on the rotate button, it'll give the selected object or objects a center point and a rotate angle that you move with your finger or stylus. It was a very intuitive use of the touch interface. The next icon over lets you increase the size of an object about its center point with an obvious drag indicator to do so. Without using this resizing icon, your shapes will not stay locked to their original aspect ratio. ArchiSketch has ordering within a layer, and it has layers as well, but we'll get into that in a minute. So the next icon on the right lets you deselect all, lock your selection, and then move selections forward and back in between layers. You can flip selections, cut them, and oddly under this icon, you can show the ruler. Again, why bury a tool like this in what is more of an ordering kind of menu? Anyway, the ruler jumps up on screen, showing the length, and you can drag the ruler endpoints to your heart's desire. This was a critical feature for Steve and me to be able to see, like I said, whether we'd have a comfortable distance between the corner of the desk and the entrance to the room. I needed that, and ArcaSketch had it. Again, buried in an odd place inside the ordering menu is the option to enable the Show Quick Switch Draw Palette. This turns on a little floating palette that lets you quickly switch between drawing shapes, lines, and using the eraser. You can drag it around on screen, which is really cool, so if it's ever in your way, it's easy to move. A tap of the red X in that little floating menu, and it disappears again. Now, I should mention that if no objects are selected on screen, that ordering menu mutates into only having the ruler and quick draw palette. With an object or object selected, you'll see a very tiny X which deletes the selected objects. Now, I wish that was a trash can because my brain is trained to look for that, and I keep glancing right past the X trying to figure out how to delete an object. I know why they didn't make it a trash can, though. It's because that button doubles as a cancel button. So let's say you partially rotated an object and you change your mind, you can back out with a little X. Another icon that doesn't look like what it does is the last one in the bottom right. It's a red circle with what looks like a backup one chapter button. You know, the little sideways chevron with a vertical line. Anyway, that's the undo icon. Again, once you know what it does, that kind of makes sense. But below and to the right of that red icon is a teeny tiny little red icon that has what looks like a forward button in it. Anyway, I'm not exaggerating when I say it's small. I put a photo of it in the show notes with a ruler on it. It's less than 2 millimeters in diameter. Zooming in on my photo, I can see that it's a forward button, so evidently that's the redo button. I wish you the best of luck tapping on it, though. Now, I mentioned in shapes that the shapes tool has polygons, but this is not your grandfather's polygons. This is a vector tool. You can create complex shapes, and every corner you make is a node, which can later be dragged to change the shape. These nodes can also be made into rounded corners by dragging a slider for the radius, and you can even add and delete nodes after your polygon is created. Now think about using ArcaSketch to design that fancy pool shape that you've had in your head all these years that no pool cleaner will ever be able to clean. I'm going to get to the other features, but remember the problem we're trying to solve. I want to create a two-scale drawing. When you select a shape, like let's say it's a rectangle to represent the bed, as you tap and drag on screen, you'll see two changing numbers at the top of the screen. Now, I haven't quite cracked the code yet on what causes this behavior, but sometimes the two dimensions, say, like I said, for a rectangle, are the width and height, which you would really want it to be. But other times, I swear, also drawing a rectangle, it showed me length and area. Obviously, length and width are preferable, and I tried double tapping on those to see if I could get the A to turn into width, but it didn't. But then the next time I went to do it, it was width and height. So I don't know what that is. If somebody figures that out, I would like to know, because I would like to keep it length and width. The one thing I found difficult in using ArcaSketch to draw up Kyle's room was to get my shapes and wall dimensions to be exact. I would painstakingly drag an edge, and it would fly past the number I wanted, and then I'd miss it coming back the other way. Well, luckily, when going through ArcaSketch in order to explain it to you, I discovered that if you tap on those dimensions at the top of the screen, you can type in the exact values. Man, it would have been a lot faster to redesign Kyle's room if I'd known that the first time. Well, the other problem was I would accidentally move shapes when trying to adjust something else close by. I was hoping that the lock shapes icon option in the ordering menu would lock the dimensions but still let me drag them around, but it actually locks both the dimensions and locations. In the upper right menu that we haven't explored yet, there's a little magnet, and that enables snap points. Enabling this feature allows your shapes to snap and align with each other. This is good, but I'd really hoped it was a snap to grid option. At one point in my discovery phase on ArcaSketch, I did find a snap to grid option, but its location eludes me now when I look for it, so I can't tell you where it is. If somebody finds it, let me know. Well, I mentioned earlier that in the Shapes menu, you'll find a selection rectangle. Tap and drag across a series of shapes, and any shape partially inside the rectangle will be selected. There's another way to select multiple objects, and I pretty much only do it by accident. You tap on an object, and then just tap on a second object and they're both selected. I don't think I've ever used a drawing tool where this is the default. So I'm sure I would get used to it if I used it regularly, but I can't tell you how many times I was carefully moving one object when another object I'd perfectly placed earlier was trailing along with my movements, unbeknownst to me. I think this is part of my problem with needing them to lock in place. A really interesting feature of ArcaSketch is the erase tools. Every shape you have available to you under the shape tool is also available as an erase tool. For example, you can draw a complex polygon with rounded corners as an erase tool. Whatever it is above will be erased, but only in the shape that you've selected. From what I can figure out in my testing, the erase tools don't obey any of the layering or order commands, so they're always on top. So I tried that in the ordering menu to say, okay, move this erase tool to a different layer or send it to the back. I wanted to see whether I could erase one thing below, but not the thing above it. But no, they're always on top and they're always on the layer you drew them. But you can draw circles and rectangles and just scribble with a pen. It's kind of an interesting feature. Now, if you're a retired engineer like me and Rick and Ed and Steve, or if you think like one, you want to put dimensions on your drawings. I love the way ArcaSketch does dimensions. A simple tap of the dimension tool allows you to tap and drag along, say, an open space or on an object where it'll snap to the snap points, and then you can let go and your dimensions will appear on screen. But sometimes they're not aligned correctly, you know, that maybe they land right on the object. You can simply tap and drag on the number to make the dimension location easier to the eye. Oddly, you can also drag these dimensions around, which happened to me a few times. Can you guess what caused it? Yep, leaving one selected when I tapped and dragged something else. The other weird thing is you can lie and change the dimension by tapping on the number and just entering a new value. It will show you that you're a cheater, though. The hand-typed dimensions will be in italics. With ArcaSketch Dimensions tool, I was able to determine that I would have just under 24 inches to walk through the door, even with the desk where I wanted it, which was fine. Now, if you have a photo or another drawing that you want to use as the basis for your drawing, especially let's say you're drawing in 3D, there's a button to import images and then fade them so it's easier to draw on top of them. Under the star menu, you'll find a few floor plan symbols to help you get started. For example, there's a conference room table, a couch, and maybe a dozen or more symbols like that. You can create your own symbols and store them in the symbols library to use across your projects. I tried using the double bed symbol they provided, and it didn't fit well in the room at all, and I was kind of worried. I checked, and their symbol was much wider than the double bed I own. So I don't know if there's two sizes of double beds or they didn't do theirs right, but mine fits. Anyway, I tried to change the dimensions of the symbol-created bed, and they wouldn't let you do that. So just be wary if you're laying something out to use the real dimensions. Now, I've only got a few more things I want to tell you about ArcaSketch before I let you loose with it. In the upper right, there's a layers menu where you can actually easily add new layers, switch layers on which you want to work, delete layers, and change whether a layer is visible. The add layers button is pretty obvious. It's a plus sign on top of two rectangles. The edit layers button is quite a bit less obvious. It's a horizontal line with a vertical line down on the right edge, sort of like an L on its side. Let's see, and I think that's also backwards. Anyway, it's a weird choice, but it works really well once you know what it means. The best menu option I found in the upper right is the question mark. I really wish I'd noticed this when I first used ArcaSketch to draw out Kyle's room. It is filled with many very lovely 1 to 2 minute long videos to teach you how to use the tools. I learned so many things in watching the first 3 or 4 that kept me from sounding like an idiot in this review. Remember when I said at the beginning I didn't do the scale correctly the first time I used ArcaSketch? One of those videos taught me how to set up the scale properly. After viewing the help videos, I was able to recreate Kyle's room in about a tenth the time that it did the first time, so these help files are very well worth watching. Like I said, they're really short, so you're not investing a ton of time. You just watch the ones you need to see. The bottom line is that I could have drawn this far easier and more quickly using graph paper and a pencil. But having learned to use ArcaSketch, at least the basics, I know I'll be able to rely on it for future layouts. I don't want you to think I've explained all that ArcaSketch can do because I haven't watched all of the little videos. I encourage you to download the app and watch and learn for yourself. The even better news is that through using ArcaSketch, we discovered that Logan's idea did fit. We reorganized the room and it is officially no longer the room of crap. I'm looking forward to moving my studio in there and who knows, maybe I'll like it in there and I keep it for good. I told Steve that if I do, he has to get me a green screen to recreate my mantle of toys in there, though. Anyway, check out ArcaSketch at arcasketch.eu and in the iOS App Store. Well, this week we had three new people contribute financially to the success of the podcast. Ian and April both took the time to go to podfeet.com/Patreon and elect to pledge a dollar amount per No Silicast episode to help support the production of the shows. It always humbles me when I see people contributing in this way because it shows they're getting true value out of the shows. As a public service announcement, please, when you go to Patreon, pay very close attention when you make your pledge to how the producer has chosen to charge. Frank pledged last week to the No Silicast, and all of the other shows he supports charge monthly, so he put in the amount he wanted to pledge to the No Silicast per month. Luckily, I questioned his sanity because I charge essentially per week, not per month, because I do it per No Silicast. Luckily, we caught this before you had to go on food stamps, so just pay close attention when you sign up for how each individual producers choose to charge. In any case, special thanks to Ian and April for supporting the show. Now, maybe you've got subscription fatigue, but still want to find a way to contribute. You could choose to make a one-time payment via PayPal, like Janet did this week. Now, that's really easy to find, too. Just go to podfeet.com/PayPal, and you can find it right there. Thank you to all of you who contribute in whatever way you can. Well, it's that time of the week again. It's time for Security Bits with Bart Bouchatz. How are you today, Bart?
I am grand, having spent most of my afternoon dodging thunderstorms, mostly successfully.
Well, we've got a lot on the docket today. We should probably tuck in.
Yeah, if anyone wants to play, like, I don't know, if it's a Friday evening or something and people want to somehow get drunk quickly, play a little game. Every time I say Black Hat or DEF CON, have a shot. You will be plastered.
I thought you were just going to say every time we say Google or Facebook.
Well, that works every week. But because it's been DEF CON on Black Hat week, which is why there are so many stories, because this is like the biggest pair of security conferences in the year. This is like the security equivalent of WWDC.
Oh, okay. Okay, the CES of
exactly.
Fun.
Huh? Yes, exactly. So that's why there's so much going on. But before we do of that, I just want to say I really enjoyed the episode you recorded with Rob Dunwood.
Oh, good, good. Where we talked about sideloading, for anybody who hasn't listened, we talked about sideloading Android apps and the fact that Fortnite, when it comes out on Android, will only fit a few phones and has to be sideloaded, which is a little bit dangerous.
Yeah, so I did a lot of thinking about it because my initial gut reaction, I haven't thought about this because it's been a busy week, but my initial gut reaction was, yeah, that's a bad idea. Which I think we were in quite a good agreement on that. It's like, yeah.
Yeah,
and then
yeah,
the more I thought about it and the more I listened to you guys talking over and back, and it was actually really good that you didn't take the same position. It made for a much better episode. Mm. And I found myself going, on balance, I think Rob is right. But neither of you landed on what I think is actually the takeaway we should take from all of this.
Okay, what do you think the takeaway was?
So, to me, I think Rob is correct when he says that Android is designed not to have a single app store with a single gatekeeper. So, that's not a bug, that's a feature. The thing is, users don't really know about that. And so actually, I think there's an education issue. And maybe the problem is there's too few companies making use of Android Reality. And I'm sort of thinking about it logically. Why is this the first? Why isn't this happening all the time?
Interesting. And the thing he's talking about is the fact that Epic Games has this separate app store. And in order to start using that app store to get it, you're going to have to do the sideload. And why has nobody else done it to get out from under the 30%?
Well, not just under the 30%, right? I mean, the other so obvious example would be Steam.
Like, right.
They have app stores in all of their platforms. They have all of the... Because like a small developer is not going to want to run their own app store because that means they now have to become a credit card processor and they have to become a content delivery network. It's a giant pain in the backside for a small developer to run their own infrastructure, which is why app stores are superb for 99% of developers. But for massive corporations that have all their own infrastructure, it's just throwing money away because they have all this infrastructure. So they should just leverage their own instead of paying someone else to use infrastructure that they don't need. Right?
Yeah. But you said something there about it's a matter of education for the users. And whenever people say it's a matter of education, my alarm bells are just going, nope. You can't educate people. You simply can't do it.
Okay, but people have used Windows for decades, and you need to know what you're doing on Windows. I mean, when you choose
Windows, not what solved Windows. What solved it was when Microsoft fixed it, so it wasn't a dumpster fire.
But it's still an open platform. It's still Windows is still designed the same way as Android is designed philosophically.
And so
and
is
iOS
the Mac.
Is designed differently. The Mac is very Apple-like halfway between the two, because there are things... Right, there is nothing in Windows you cannot do as an admin. There are things on a Mac you cannot do as an admin. Anything protected by SIP, even root, cannot do. The concept of
admin. You can turn off system integrity protection.
Well, by rebooting the machine and basically, but that's a serious, that is not the same thing. That's jumping through your firing hoops and whatever that fantastic description Rob gave. That is a very, very different kettle of fish to, like, if you go run as administrator on a Windows PC, you have basically said to Windows, I know what I'm doing. I know I'm pointing a gun at my foot. I know I'm pulling the trigger. And Windows will go, sir, yes, sir. Boom.
Okay.
Whereas the Mac will go, nope. They're system files. You may think you have unlimited power, but you know something? You don't, because this is a Mac. And iOS takes that to the very extreme level where it says, no, this isn't even... Sure. I'm not even pretending to be open. I am, by design, a closed operating system. Here is your little playground, or sandbox, if you will. Go potter about in there, because that's all you're allowed to do. And so they are fundamentally very different operating systems. And I don't think people treat them differently, and they really should. And it also should factor into people's buying decisions. If your family members are saying, what phone should I buy? Are you technically competent? No. Don't buy an Android.
Yeah, and I think that's what I was trying to react to what you said about educating people is what the reality is. I have $100. I need a phone. I'm going to go buy an Android phone. Or I have $200. Or I have a kid. I'm not going to buy a kid, an $800 iPhone. I'm not going to do that. That's not going to happen. So I'm going to get Android phone.
On contract is €0 here.
Zero.
Well, no, I mean, it comes with a contract, but Your monthly bill might be €30 and your upfront cost is zero. So here in Ireland, I can certainly get you a brand new fully secured iPhone at a very reasonable price that will compete with...
Yeah, and you guys have better cell phone prices than we do, but you get the gist of what I'm saying, though, is I think people buy them... a large swath of our friends buy them because they're nerdy and they can do whatever they want. And those are absolutely the people who should go buy Android phones. But there's a much, 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 much bigger swath of people going, I don't want to spend a lot of money. This one's cheap. I'm going to get it. Mm. Or I don't care. Right? It's probably, 3% are our friends that we're used to talking to. And Rob kept saying, well, for me, and it's like, yeah, but for you, it doesn't matter. You're fine. You know what you're doing.
See, having one app be the weirdo is a much more dangerous situation than having it be the norm that there are multiple app stores.
Yeah, especially since it is the hottest selling game, hottest selling free game making a gazillion dollars.
The piracy argument doesn't hold any water for me because right now, today, before anyone is selling anything to any sort of sideloading, there are already people tricking people into hacking themselves in an attempt to get Fortnite and in an attempt to get free Photoshop and in an attempt to steal people's software. So that's always going to happen. Doesn't matter what the company involved do. That's out there. That's happening. That is always going to be happening.
Okay,
but that's not what gets me.
But hold that thought for just a second. The difference here is that Fortnite is free. So if you go to a site and it says, hey, we've got Fortnite for your phone and it looks legitimate, you know that it's free. You've heard on the news that it's coming out for Android, so you're going to want to go get it. Or worse yet, you go to the Epic Game Store and it says, no, your device can't run Fortnite. But somebody else says, well, yeah, you can. Here, I've got it over here. I'll give it to you. And it's supposed to be free. It's not like you're stealing Photoshop. I mean, you go steal Photoshop, you know you're doing something wrong.
Right.
You know?
if you're wandering off to random bits of the internet following instructions, you also know that you're outside the reservation.
Yeah, but you're 12, Bart. You're 12 years old. You know Fortnite's the coolest game. All your iPhone friends have it. You want it. It doesn't feel like it's wrong. I mean, that, no. I don't think that would raise alarm bells like, well, Photoshop is $600, but I can get it for free on this other site. Your brain, even at 12, is formed well enough to say, maybe that's not what I should do.
Right, but even at 12, you know that this is by no means the official way of doing things. I am now hacking.
Wait, no.
It may be perfectly moral, it may
no.
be perfectly ethical, no, but you no, know that isn't. You're working around authority. You know that you're doing something behind the teacher's back.
No, you don't. Not when you're going to give Fortnite, you don't, because Fortnite is by, you've been told by people who you trust and are telling the truth that Fortnite is not in the Google Play Store. So you right. went outdoors to go look for it because they told you to go outdoors.
Okay, but you just said they went to the Epic site, it said it's not available for the device, and then someone told them they could do this wave a rubber fish thing and get it anyway. At that point, yep. they know they're off the reservation. They've just been told, no, you can't do it, and they're working their way around. No. So they know that they're doing what mommy said not to do or whatever.
It all depends on how it's said there, right? Your device is not capable of running this software. Well, you know, it probably is, and that's none of your business. I'm going to try anyway. That's a little different than you're not allowed to, because it's not that. It's that your device is not doesn't have the hardware to run it. And so, you know, how many people have looked at Apple site saying you can put 8 gigabytes in this 14-year-old Mac, and you go, yeah, but I'm looking over here and it says I can put in 16. You know, I know.
Yeah,
you
but
think
you know
it
you're off the
run.
Reservation. You've gone to Apple. Apple have said no, and you've gone ahead and done it anyway. At that point, yeah. you're taking responsibility. You have left.
But you're 12.
The safe area. You're at the cliffs of Moher. There was a sign saying don't cross this line, but there's a pretty cliff, and you've walked towards it.
I suppose. Okay. Well, anyway, I do get your point, but I don't think education is ever going to happen.
Well, it can not certainly happen more than it is now. I don't think it's ever going to happen perfectly, but right now, everyone talks about Android and iPhone as if they're the same thing and it's just by a different company. That's not true. They're designed completely differently with completely different philosophies, and that has meaning, and that's not being communicated. And that needs to change. So I now know that I'm going to talk about Android differently from now on, because I have now realized that I haven't been talking about it in the way I should.
Okay. Well, good.
Oh, so anyway, it was a fun conversation, and it got me thinking, and that's always good.
Yeah. So one thing I did want to say, and this might be a big rat hole, and we were trying not to talk too long about this. You and I talked about it beforehand, was I tried to replicate what Rob said, and I thought, I've got an Android phone, and it's running, what's before Pi? Oreo. It's running Oreo, up-to-date Oreo. So it's, you know, Pi only came out like 2 weeks ago. I went to download the Amazon App Store. I figured that was a safe one to go get. And when I tried to download it, it said, you need to go into settings and you have to tell us to, you have to authorize it to allow this other kind of store. What is it called? I forget. Install unknown apps is what I had to turn on. So when I went to go do that, I thought it would say this one app the way he described it, but it didn't. It gave me a choice of places to get apps, one of which was Chrome. So I enabled Chrome, went back to the Amazon app. Then it would let me install it. It said this type of file can harm your device. You want to keep it anyway? I said yes, and it installed it. I went back to look at Chrome in the settings, and it was still enabled.
Right, because
so it didn't disable itself.
Yeah, so I found the website howtogeek.com. Per app is not per app you're installing. It's per app you're installing with. So what you're actually doing is you're enabling apps to act as app stores. So in the case of Chrome, that means that you have now said that my browser has permission to install any app I choose to install through my browser, which is a kind of a weird one. But if the app
because
in question,
that's everything.
Right, but if the app in question is an actual app store, that makes infinitely more sense. So if I was Samsung... So before Oreo, the only choice would be all or nothing. Whereas now, if I were Samsung, I could have a Samsung App Store, pre-install it on the phones I ship, and have that switch set to on from my App Store. And what you have is a situation where people can only get apps from Google Play and from your store. And if the user wants to go anywhere else, they still have to go in and enable it one app at a time. So it's
guess what they have to do, Bart? They have to go to Chrome and turn on Chrome first in order to install the App Store.
No. I'm saying the scenario is that your phone vendor, remember, there's two people.
Oh, the phone vendor. Sorry. Gotcha.
right? So there is now a way for Samsung to have, sitting next to Google's App Store as a complete peer with Google's App Store, their App Store. And there's also the possibility, because it's okay. an API okay, that your app you. Has to say, I support. Basically, it's an API that says, I am an app installer. So you can have an app in the Google Play Store that is an installer for other apps. So then you can get it without having to go and enable it on Chrome if the installer is in the Play Store. So it I is a big improvement.
Okay, yeah.
But it's not what I thought it was, because what I thought it was what we have on the Mac, where you can get an unsigned app and say, just run this one app. And I wish you could say, just install this one app.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, we should probably start security bits.
Oh, is that what we're recording?
Well, in theory, it's a good thing I spent almost all week working on my homework for Programming by Stealth and haven't written much material, so this is awesome.
I'm glad to be of help. I wish I could say I'd spent all week writing lots and lots of show notes for the next Programming by Stealth, but that's not true. But hopefully by the time we record on Sunday, that will be true. Fingers crossed, touch wood.
All right, well, let's start security bits then.
Okay, so our traditional follow-up story is, how many ways are Intel chips broken in the last 2 weeks? The answer is two. They both have fun names. So one is called L1TF, which is Level 1 Terminal Fault. Really, the takeaway, actually, to be honest, right, I've sort of buried the lead here. The takeaway at the top of all of this is that we, as end users, don't have to care about this.
If oh, good.
We were running a cloud service, we would have to care very much, because what these vulnerabilities allow to happen is for one app running on a physical computer to see into the memory belonging to another app, sharing that physical computer. Now, if I have malware running on my desktop, that's the problem. The fact that the malware can see into another app's memory isn't my problem. My problem is I have malware running.
Right.
But if I'm a cloud provider offering virtual machines, having my virtual machine be able to see into your virtual machine is a catastrophe.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why anyone running virtualization infrastructure is patch, 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 patchy, McPatch, patch. Now, the good thing is there are patches for all of these. So those sysadmins are having a very busy time at the moment.
If you were to choose a cloud provider right now for a virtual machine, you'd probably not go find the cheapest fly-by-night one.
I would never go with a fly-by-night one. I would find the cheapest reputable one.
Right. I'm just thinking, you know, this makes you think higher of the bigger names that you know of.
The people who've earned a reputation, whether that be by being the really smart upstarts, so your DigitalOceans, or whether that be your hardened long-term experts like your AWS's or your Microsoft Azure's, in both cases, you're right, it does make me sort of go, let's stay in the bit of the pool we know about.
Yeah.
As opposed to my favorite host, 123.cheap.com. not so much.
Yeah. Okay, but that's fun.
So that's one of them. And then the other one is actually slightly scarier. But again, if I'm a home user, this means I have malware on my machine already. So that's why it doesn't really worry me as a home user. But this one is interesting because it doesn't just let one app see into another app's memory or one virtual machine into another virtual machine's memory. It also bypasses something called Software Guard Extensions, or SGX, which is basically Intel's version of the Secure Enclave. It's relatively new and they're modern chips. And it was supposed to be a giant big security step forward. Only it's just gotten completely owned by these, again, side channel attacks. Now, again, there's a new microcode patch out. If you install the microcode patch, you're protected. And according to Intel's benchmarking, there is no significant performance impact. So, patchy McPatch patch is again your friend here. So there's no need for us to panic, but you are going to continue to hear breathless stories about the next giant big Intel flaw. For now, the takeaway for all of them is you're grand as a home user. The scary one was the one that could be done over JavaScript, because then it involves not installing malware on your machine, but visiting a web page. And visiting a web page we do.
Right.
But that was the Spectre or Meltdown. Whichever one of those it was, that one has been patched. And so that one we did have to worry about, but we can stop worrying now, assuming we've patched ourselves. So for now, stay patched, stay secure, don't worry about it. And if that changes, we'll mention it on the show.
All right.
Notable security updates. Patch Tuesday has been and gone since last we spoke. Critical updates from Microsoft and Adobe, Windows Flash, usual suspects, couple of 0 days plugged. So basically, patchy, patchy, patch, patch.
Okay.
Adobe then released an out-of-band patch. So Adobe took part in Patch Tuesday, and then they released an out-of-band patch for Photoshop Creative Cloud. And they're warning about remote code execution, and they're calling it critical. So if you are a Photoshop Creative Cloud user, I would say don't let too much grass grow on this update. Go install it. Because Adobe don't put stuff out
Creative
of band.
Cloud doesn't, that doesn't just go by itself.
I may ask. I'm pretty sure it asks you to. It sort of tells you, I have an update available. Maybe you can turn on an automatic setting. I don't remember off the top of my head. But mine certainly asks me, do you want to update? And it's a pain in the backside because if you're... Because then I have to close Lightroom. And it takes 20 kabillion hours to open again.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, definitely do the patchy patch patch. And so, notable news. There's going to be some, as I say, DEF CON, Black Hat, DEF CON. So, at the DEF CON security conference, security researchers released details of vulnerabilities in the fax feature of many network-connected HP multifunction devices. Now, initially, my thought was, well, it doesn't matter. Who the hell still uses faxes? The answer is, half the planet still uses faxes because corporations rely on them heavily. And the scary thing is what this provides is a back door into the internal corporate network. Because your multifunction device, in order to function as a multifunction device, is connected to your LAN, where all of your PCs are, and all of your users, and all of your sensitive data. And your multifunction fax-enabled device is connected to the plain old telephone system, or the POTS. Because it has a world-facing telephone number, because otherwise you can't receive a fax. And you trigger these vulnerabilities through the fax interface, and it gives you root access on the device which has a network port in the middle of your LAN, so you now, as an attacker, have just gotten into the LAN and can do whatever you like in there, whatever other vulnerabilities
are. So if you've got an HP printer with a fax capability, but you aren't even faxing, you'd still be vulnerable, wouldn't you?
Assuming you had the phone line shoved into its bottom.
Right, right. Yeah, oh, good point, good point.
And okay. So if you're not using the fax functionality, unless you were faxing and haven't bothered in months and months and months, you may have it plugged into the phone line. In which case, the answer is very simple. Plink! Just unplug it and carry on with your life. There is also patches released by HP for many of their devices. But a little bit of controversy, they forgot or haven't gotten around to or couldn't be bothered updating the Mac installers. So basically, if you have a Windows PC, you can run their .exe file to get your printer updated. But if you have a Mac, many of them are unupdatable unless you can find a friend with a Windows machine, which is a poor show on HP's behalf.
Jeez.
Yeah. And then the other thing that the security researchers note is that they focused on HP because HPs are just ubiquitous. But they're pretty sure lots of other vendors are using very, very similar chipsets with very, very similar drivers, and the chances are extremely high that they're all vulnerable too. They just haven't yet done the work to prove it. And realistically, the chances are half of the criminal underworld are now doing just that homework. So awesome. I wouldn't be even...
Let's just stop faxing everybody. That's the solution.
Apparently, in some countries, a fax is considered admissible as evidence in court and an email is not. And therefore, if you want to do something official, you must fax it.
They used to do that all here with getting a home mortgage, that sort of thing was always faxing, but I think they're over that finally.
Yeah, unfortunately not in everywhere else on planet Earth, sadly.
I do know when I had to settle my mother's estate, the idiots I was dealing with at Wells Fargo made me fax, and I was calling around and like old people were laughing at me. Oh, honey, we haven't had a fax machine here in 20 years. What are you faxing?
I think I still have an old Apple fax modem dongle from when I used to have a 17-inch MacBook Pro.
Oh, see, you've always had dongles.
Oh, so yeah, I'm completely with you on the dongle thing. As far as I'm concerned, your stuff you connect to your computer should be external to your computer, so you can change your computer anytime you want, and so you can use your stuff on any device you want. This notion that I should have 20 million ports in a giant, big, heavy laptop is, in my opinion, stupid.
Yay! I hope Stephen Getz just heard that. Okay.
Oh, I've just made lots of enemies. Half of our listeners are now going, Bart, you're a bloody moron. And the other half are going, I totally agree
all
with
the
you.
Time.
Okay, so that's our first big DEF CON story, and that made a lot of news because that's for companies, that's a really big deal. Also, at the DEF CON security conference, researchers released details of a zero-day privilege escalation attack against macOS. And the researcher in question decided to just drop it as a zero-day because it was too much effort to report it this responsibly. Now, fire extinguishers at the ready. This one is one of those situations where if you already have malware running on your Mac, that malware can now click OK on security dialog boxes behind your back. That's not good, because in theory it's belt and suspenders, and the suspenders just fell down. But unless you have no belt on, you're fine. So again, if you already have malware on your Mac, it would be nice if there were more hurdles in that malware's way, but you do already actually have a really big problem. There's malware in your Mac.
Yeah.
So I'm not panicking about this. And another reason I'm not panicking is because Apple have fundamentally changed how the OS does some security stuff. And as an effect of that, Apple have actually altered the mechanism responsible here so that in Mojave, this problem does not exist. Mojave? Oh, sugar, I've forgotten now.
By the way,
like wasabi. So what, Mojave?
There you go. Kaylee from Japan said that they've officially decided in Japan that it's Mojave. And she gave this long, great explanation of how she can tell in the dictionary definition and everything. And I said, that's okay. I'm just going to start referring to Mount Fiji.
Mount Fiji. That's the Hawaiian snow-capped volcano in Japan.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's that annoying. That's what it sounds like to us. If I called it Mount Fiji every single day in front of you, that's like me hearing the wrong names for the OS.
We could call it Canon instead of Canon. Anyway.
All right.
All right, so that's our next DEF CON story. Now, the next one isn't a DEF CON story. I don't think it is. Anyway, initial headlines sound catastrophic. A 20-year-old bug has been found in the most common SSH library on the planet, OpenSSH. You might think, oh my God, we're all doomed. The good news is that is a true statement. There has indeed been a bug found in OpenSSH that has existed for 20 years. It is now past.
That's the good news? You mean the
bad
news? Oh,
yeah, it's true, right? The facts are factual, but the implications are not what you might rush to judgment. So there are security implications. And the grand total of the security implications are that if you have an unpatched version of OpenSSH, it will be quicker to respond to you if you guess a username and password where the username doesn't exist than when the username does exist and you guess the password wrong. So it's a timing difference between the user doesn't exist and the user does exist. So you can use this to help you brute force passwords by at least knowing that you got the username half right and then hammering away on that one account.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But of course, it doesn't in any way mean that if your password is strong, basically, you should always assume that the attacker knows your username anyway, because your password should be protecting you, not your username. It shouldn't be security by obscurity. It should be security by your password being a strong password, or by not using passwords and using SSH keys only, which are all strong, unless, well, let's just say they're strong. So if you had a really bad password and you have an SSH server facing the internet, then this is a problem. But you know something? If you have a really bad password and your SSH server is facing the internet, you have a bigger problem. You have a really bad password and it's facing the internet. So, yeah, it's fixed. Update yourself. But really, if you have a strong password, yawn, carry on. Next.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I like this trend, by the way, so far. I'm afraid it doesn't keep going, but for now, this is a trend. So we're still in the good news segment of the ledger here. So Facebook have revealed that they have been working on an algorithm to rate their users' trustworthiness, and they've been working at this behind the scenes for many years. So Facebook have this amazing ability to learn all sorts of stuff about us, and generally speaking, they've been applying this ability for the purpose of getting money out of us, or by selling us to others for money, but basically for financial gain. It's so nice that they're using their genius for good. I'm still not going to use Facebook, but I still like the fact that they're turning their immense talents towards basically algorithmically determining who are the genuine people on Facebook and who are the fake news boosters who are not real.
Yeah, so the description I heard on Daily Tech News Show was that it's going to look at people who say, hey, this story was fake. So there's a way to report stories. And if someone is constantly saying fake to things that are actually demonstrably true by fact checkers, then they will become a lore authority.
Yeah, so one of the many abuses on Facebook, and there are many abuses on Facebook, is abuse of the abuse system. Which is particularly annoying, I imagine. Like, if I were to put myself in Facebook's shoes, I have to provide an abuse feature, because otherwise my platform is going to be a complete, total and utter cesspool. And now I find that they're abusing my abuse feature by reporting legitimate stuff as illegitimate stuff. I mean, that's got to be infuriating. By trying to put artificial intelligence and machine learning and all of these kind of technologies together to build an algorithm to figure out which reports of abuse are actual reports of actual abuse and which abuse reporters are abusing the abuse report. I think that's all correct. Anyway, you get what I'm saying. So this is a good use of Facebook's immense skills and knowledge. So, you know, I like it.
Good on them.
Yeah, good on them, exactly. Then I'm afraid we stick with Facebook and we say good on Apple, not so good on Facebook for the next story. So at Apple's request, so I don't think it went as far. It didn't come to the point where Apple had to pull the app. Apple basically went, you know something, Facebook? Your VPN app, Onavo, isn't really in keeping with our rules. So how's about you remove it before we do it for you? And Facebook went, yeah, okay, grant. And they took it down. So why?
What was it doing?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a VPN app, that sounds like a good thing. It's like, right, and what's Facebook's business model again? Oh, yeah, data hoover. What does a VPN do? It routes all of your traffic through the servers operated by the VPN provider. Data hoover? Oh, dear. Yeah, they were tracking everything you did. By design.
And doing what with it?
Tracking it, Facebook user X went to this website, this website, this website, and this website. And because it's at a network level, they also know every app you use, because any app that talks to the internet, that traffic goes through the VPN too. So they basically get to put themselves as a man in the middle between you and everything you do. So they just get to watch. Which for a company that thrives off trying to figure out who you are and what makes you tick, being able to watch all of your internet traffic is a pretty good way to figure out your personality and what makes you tick.
Hmm.
It's a really privileged position for Facebook to be in. And the fact that Facebook are tying your account to your internet activity and they're getting to see all of your internet activity, I mean, it's a gold mine for Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. Now, my understanding was that Apple changed their guidelines, which then made this not allowed.
Arguably, it was never okay, but Apple redid their wording to sort of make it more explicit that they didn't want people doing certain kinds of things. So you could, Apple's argument is it's always been wrong, but they have certainly updated their verbiage recently. So the other argument is, well, maybe you thought it was wrong, but it's not what you meant to say. It's what you actually said, and what you actually said wasn't. So anyway, you could argue about it one way or the other. But yes, Apple have been tightening up their phraseology and their App Store guidelines to make it a bit more watertight. And as a result, it's easier for them to tell people to take their apps down because they can point to a clearer rule.
Yeah, I heard on one show, and I don't remember which it was, it might have been macOS Ken, exactly what you said was that Apple asked them to take it down and they did. But on the Daily Tech News show, they said Apple asked them to take it down and they didn't. So Apple went back and took it down for them. So I'm not sure.
Okay, so
those are two valid sources.
They are both valid sources. So the reading, the news sources I've read have been saying that Facebook removed their app at Apple's request. Either way, it's gone. And the instigators of the going away are Apple, either directly or indirectly.
And
I mean, if someone says to you, take this down or we'll do it for you, I would say you could sum that up as Apple took it down. You know, I mean, if you were trying to write a short headline, I think you could say either of those scenarios and just say Apple took it down.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, the point being, Apple said, tut tut, and it's gone. Security researchers... Security researchers have found that alterations made to Android by many hardware makers and cell carriers are adding security vulnerabilities into Android, resulting in millions of brand new Android devices being vulnerable right out of the box.
Wait a minute, what do you mean? They're adding security vulnerabilities? They're saying, hey, look, let's take this bad thing and stick it in there on
No,
purpose?
What they're doing is they're customizing Android and they're just bad at it.
Oh, jeez.
Because they're not software vendors. They're cell carriers and hardware vendors. But they're writing operating systems effectively.
Yeah.
That is not their strength. And it shows. It's a dumb model. Having anyone between you and the vendor of your operating system is a dumb model. I have said it from the moment Android came out, and I'm going to continue to say it until Android adopt Apple's model.
Yeah.
Broken by design. Now, we're still hammering on our friends Google, unfortunately. They're not very good at being clear, I would argue, in what it means to turn off location history. Because to you and me, location history is a descriptive term. It means a record of where you have been over time. To Google, location history is a specific feature which tracks your location history proactively all of the time. But any other incidental tracking of your history isn't covered by location history. That's just maps remembering where you've been. That's not location history, that's maps, don't you know? And the end result...
It's obvious that you would want maps to know your location. Okay, it's the fact that they're storing it that matters, right?
Right, exactly. So the key difference, right? So the argument of, well, maps has to know where you are is like, yes, maps has to know where I am. Not where I was yesterday, the day before, last month, last year. That's all irrelevant. Maps doesn't need to know where I was. It needs to know where I am. Google searches are better when they know where I am, because it can. If I say coffee shop, it won't send me to Cupertino. It will instead send me to, I would guess, Starbucks and the library of Maynooth University.
Mm-hmm.
That's useful. But again, it's instantaneous. So it's a very different thing to say, Google, I trust you to use this information to tell me what I need from you right now. It's a whole different thing to then keep that forever and map everywhere I go. And when I turn off a feature labeled location history, I expect, as a reasonable human being, that that means don't do that. But that wasn't Google's interpretation. And they are under a consent decree in the US where they're not supposed to be misleading. It's one of the conditions of them basically getting away without being completely crucified by, I can't remember if it was the FTC or the FCC, and I always confuse the two of them, but one of those federal agencies in America has a consent decree with Google where basically they said, we would prosecute you, but you've done a deal with us.
Yeah.
And you agree to be good boys from now on, and then we won't prosecute you. Well, people are kind of going, I don't think this is in compliance.
Yeah.
So anyway, Google figured out how to solve this problem. Now, you might think, oh, great, the button does what it says in the tin. No, they've relabeled the tin. They basically said, this button doesn't do what you might think it does. Okay, at least you're now, the button and the label on the button are now in agreement. You know, what the button does and what the button says it does are in agreement. The problem is, what we actually want is a way to stop you tracking our location history. Relabeling the button that doesn't do it doesn't solve the actual problem here.
Does it help you find how to make it go away?
Nope. Thankfully, there are links in the show notes to the many different... Well, you've got to navigate several to more than one screen, basically, to get what you're hoping to achieve. But you can get better control. So there's a link in the show notes. Here's how to stop Google from tracking your location from the good people at the Mac Observer. So they just basically walk you through the different menus to go find it. I just think that it should be a single option labeled don't track my location history. You know, make the button do what it said, and I think that would be fantastic. And now, in fairness, changing what a button does is much harder than changing the text on a button. So let's give Google the benefit of the doubt and say that they have now done a short-term quick fix and they're now working on doing the right thing.
Aren't you the cutest little thing?
I am probably completely wrong, but let's take the optimistic view and carry on.
You know, I did... I was going to say, I've noticed that Google is getting more aggressive when asking for my location. I can go on just to my web browser, type in the search bar, I want to look up consent decree, and it'll say, oh, can I have your location?
Yeah, when you search, it really wants to know where you are.
Why? And I can't make it stop.
What browser are you using?
Safari on my iPhone. Safari on my Mac.
Okay, well, you can just turn off... Like, if you don't want any website to have your location, which is not an unreasonable thing to want, you can just turn off. You can just set in the security and privacy tab. You can just say that Safari can never have your location. And then it's
but
just
that doesn't mean it won't ask.
No, it does. If you turn that off, if you say Safari is not allowed my location, it won't ask you because Safari is not allowed your location. I do it on all my Macs. I leave on my iPhone. I have a single website that genuinely needs my location, so I have to leave it on my iPhone, which is annoying. But on all of my Macs, I just have location turned off, and then Safari stops asking. It's like, oh, you've given me a clear signal that this is just off globally. Okay.
All right, maybe after the show you can, or after we're done recording, you can show me where it is, because I don't see it under security or privacy in Safari. So, but we'll chat afterwards.
Which OS are we
afterwards.
On is, I guess, the first question.
On my Mac, which is where you said you saw it.
Yeah, so it's here somewhere. I turned it off years ago, and it hasn't come back on, thankfully.
We can chat offline.
Yeah, anyway, it's in one of those nice new settings Apple have given us. Because they're much better about it than they used to be on macOS, because they're learning from iOS. Okay, so the next story involves our friends Apple. Good timing. So an Australian teenager, I think it was called Hacky Hacky Hack Hack, was the name of the folder where he stored the 90 gigs of secure files he hacked out of Apple. He did also tell the judge that he hacked Apple because he really admired the company and wanted the job at Apple. Don't quite think he's understood how Apple HR works.
Right.
But anyway, an Australian teenager has been arrested for stealing 90 gigs worth of secure files out of Apple. Thankfully, Apple were quick to respond and say, yeah, he got some stuff off our private servers, but it wasn't customer data. So I don't mind if Apple lose some trade secrets or whatever, but I do really mind if Apple lose their customer data to Hacky Hacky McHackhack. So it is good that... That Apple have been able to confirm that it wasn't our data he stole. And 90 gigs, you know, if all he got is 90 gigs, that wouldn't be many users, iCloud or whatever. So I guess that's something. But anyway, it's an interesting
hopefully.
Story. I can now tell you, by the way, where that setting is. If you go into Security and Privacy, go to the Privacy tab, click Location Services, you then have a tick box next to every app. And you just untick
Hang
Security.
Hang on. I'm in Privacy.
Security and Privacy... And then there's four tabs across.
No, there's a security and a privacy. You're not talking about Safari settings. You're talking about settings.
System preferences.
Yeah, you said Safari before. Right? At least that's what I heard. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. So under the privacy tab, you have location services for every app that's allowed to access your location services, just like you have ones for contacts, calendars. So you basically just untick Safari, and then Safari just thinks there is no such thing as location.
Huh.
And while you're at it, actually, the nice thing they've added into the Mac, what they've had in iOS for years, is that little arrow icon next to every app that has asked for your location. And I am happy to say that the only app on my Mac that has successfully gotten my location is Maps. And you know something? I want Maps to know where I am.
This is interesting. That is very interesting. Weather has not asked for it. It was allowed to, but has not gotten it. I don't know. iSet Menus has it. Safari, according to this, has never asked for it, if that's what that indicator is supposed to be. Oh, it's supposed to be in the last 24 hours. Yes, yeah,
there's a legend underneath within the last 24 hours.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, well,
I'm not
Safari
sure I'll turn that off because there are times I need Safari. Like, I'm looking for a store to buy paint, right? If I'm looking for something locally, I'm looking for...
Would you do that in Maps?
The closest Best... I'm on Best Buy's website, and I want it to know where I am in order to find something, the right store. Anyway.
Yeah, I did that on my iPhone
that it's
for
there.
Some reason. Yeah. It's good to know it's there. And the other thing is notice that you have contacts, calendars, reminders, accessibility. So it's kind of good actually to know about that menu because it's very much like the iOS approach to managing access to stuff. And in Mojave, that whole interface is getting even better with even more control. So
okay, cool.
Good to know. Okay. Last important story I have here in the show notes as notable news. Microsoft disrupt fancy bear election meddlers. So basically Microsoft are proactively taking down phishing sites being run by this advanced persistent threat, sometimes called fancy bears. It goes by a few names, but it's basically the one that pretty much everyone is almost certain is the Russian government. And they had a bunch of phishing sites targeted at US political think tanks, and this particular instance, right-wing think tanks, and also the US Senate and specific senators. So these were basically spear phishing websites. They had domain names like OneDrive-Microsoft.com and stuff like that. So basically, you know, to non-tech aficionados, they would look like plausible domain names. They were perfect clones of Microsoft's login page. You see where this is going.
Yeah.
So, you know, well done, Microsoft, for being proactive on this. It, you know, Microsoft, again, are a corporation with many resources and many skills. So I am happy to see them use those resources and skills for the common good of all. So, well, good on you.
Yeah. Now, I'm not sure this would have counted as a big story, but I don't see it in your notes. One follow-up thing, the FCC has now admitted that it was not hacked.
Yeah, we talked about that last time. It's
Did we?
We actually talked about it.
Oh, it is 2 weeks ago. Okay, never mind. I thought that was this week. Okay, never mind.
Yeah, literally in the follow-up section too, which is ironic because that's exactly where you said I should put it.
All right.
Suggested reading, lots of fun stuff in there as always. Just a few things to highlight. So we've talked a few times about this new trend where you get an email with one of your old passwords in it as proof that the extortionist has hacked into your stuff and you should hand them over some Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Well, there's a new variant on this. The proof is that they know your phone number. But you know something? All those same data breaches with your passwords in it, probably many of them had your phone number in it too. So basically, it's the same trick. It's a trick. There are just so many breaches online that people know stuff about you.
Yeah.
So, again, just to tell people, there's a new variant of the same trick.
I thought of another follow-up I wanted to do. Can I squeeze it in here?
Sure, squeeze.
Bart and I were talking last time about the emergency services on the iPhone X, and he said you need to disable the auto dial because it'll start dialing and it'll actually call them. And I said mine was off by default, and you said, no, I'm positive it was on by default because mine was on by default, and you and I went back and forth on it. I ran a poll on Facebook, and 57 people responded. 30 of them said it was off, and 27 of them said it was on. And virtually every person who wrote any text about it, and a lot of people did, said, nope, I have no memory of ever having changed this. And I even had them do it by country, thinking, okay, maybe in the EU it's on and in the US it's off. Nope, no correlation whatsoever. No idea.
Something must correlate somewhere, but I'll be darned if I can figure out what it is.
But I thought that was, so yes, we're both right. I think Apple just has a coin. They flip it. They go, okay, leave it on for that guy. Turn it off for him. Turn it on for her.
Yeah, it's bizarre, isn't it? But either way, I guess the point still stands. Check the setting is how you wish it to be. Because God knows what it is now. It really could be anything.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Sort of a callback to earlier. Epic want you to turn on two-factor authentication. So iMore actually have a nice description of how to turn it on. And after I put that in the show notes, I was listening to Daily Tech News Today Headlines, which, by the way, is one of the best five-minute daily podcasts on this planet. It's just 5 minutes of the DTNS crew. It's some days it's, you know, it's different Tom presenters every day. It's just whoever, you know, sometimes it's Tom himself. It varies. But it's like 5 minutes. Now you know the important stuff. And then you can go off and look up the stuff that you care deeply about, right? Because it is headlines. It does exactly what it says in the tin. Anyway, one of the headlines today was that Epic are giving free in-game stuff to people who turn on two-factor auth. So they are giving you, like, they're dangling a carrot in front of you.
Oh, that's a neat idea.
I mean, I don't play Fortnite, so it didn't make any sense, but it was some sort of Fortnite skill that means that your character can boogie or something.
Yeah.
I'm assuming it means something to Fortnite players. But anyway, turn on two-factor auth and you get a cool thing. So go. Yeah, that's good. Oh, I have a story here that I forgot to put the actual text on, so I'm going to have to click on it myself to see what the headline should be. Sure, it was riveting. How to enable Instagram two-factor authentication. Okay, that is actually a useful thing. So that's also in the suggested reading section in the PSA's tips and advice. And one that may or may not be of interest to people who have kids in school, the Missouri Education Watchdog wrote a blog post warning that Google Apps for Schools may well be storing a lot more information than you hoped on kids. So if your school is debating which provider to go for, do we become a Microsoft user? Do we become a Google user? Do bear in mind that the business model of both companies is very, very different, and that has real-world actual impacts on the service provided.
Yeah.
And that was a real hot-button issue in the institution I work in, because we're an educational institution, and we don't deal with kids, officially. whether a first-year undergrad is a grown-up is an interesting question, but legally speaking, it's a settled matter. They are adults. But yeah, I mean, even in a university, it's a thing people care about, because researchers are excruciatingly picky about where their top secret research that hasn't been published yet goes, because you know what that is? That is their career. But again, when you're dealing with kids in school, it's a different question. It's, this is my kids. But the problem is the same. It's all about handling the data. So if this is something that's relevant to you, you may want to have a read of that article from the Missouri Education Watchdog. Notable breaches and privacy violations. Again, I'm just going to sort of give you the headlines. If you fear you were caught up in one of these, the links are in the show notes. You can dig deeper. Babysitting, which is, there's an app called Sitter, which is apparently the babysitting app du jour. They sort of did that thing where you have a MongoDB database that you don't bother putting a password on and you accidentally expose to the whole internet. The same thing called VTech and a whole bunch of other companies over the years. So they did that and effectively breached 93,000 users' data. So that was clever of them. Facebook.
So wait a minute. You can buy an app that's a babysitter? That's cool.
No, it's like Uber for babysitters, but instead of a car showing up, a babysitter shows up.
Okay.
Yeah, if an app could, well, arguably the television has been babysitting for many years, but
so I guess exactly.
Netflix is a babysitter app, I guess. Facebook said that the My Personality app misused 4 million users worth of personal data on their busy emailing messaging affected people. Twitter admits that they accidentally exposed a whole bunch of user messages when they made a boo-boo while trying to archive off old stuff.
Twitch, not Twitter.
Sorry, my bad. Yeah, dead right. Thank you. Twitch, the video people. T-Mobile, just before we went to air, announced that they had suffered a data breach affecting 2.2 million customers. Silver lining, no payment cards, no passwords, dark cloud between that silver lining. Pretty much everything you need to do a phishing attack against you or to extort you by pretending to be T-Mobile, because it includes things like how you pay your bill and all that kind of stuff. So phishing person's dream.
Yikes.
And then kind of an interesting one from a civil liberties point of view. Sacramento admit that they use their license plate cameras to track social welfare recipients to see what they get up to. Because, I mean, if they're getting money from the government, we really should be spying on them, shouldn't we?
Now, that's interesting. Track license plates.
Yeah, so basically you're on unemployment benefit and they just watch to see where you go in case you're, I don't know.
Well, wait a minute, but license plates don't have trackers in them. What do they mean by...
They have cameras. Sorry, this is these things that so many cities have now, cameras all over the city tracking people's license plates with...
Okay, AI. So they're using the data that's publicly available.
No. What do you mean publicly available?
So the city is... making these, I guess.
You can't say what those cameras are seeing, right? They're not public.
Okay.
You can't go to Sacramento.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, so Sacramento has cameras all over the place with number plate recognition software behind those cameras. And the Sacramento have just admitted that they were abusing that tracking data, which is supposed to be used for, you know, law enforcement and stuff, to just spy on people who happen to have the sin of needing welfare.
Interesting.
Civil liberty stuff, basically.
Yeah. Is that illegal?
It would
I'm
be
not
in
arguing
Europe.
Whether it should be. I'm just wondering whether it is.
I am not well up enough on American law to answer that for you. But the ACLU certainly don't think it's appropriate.
Yeah. Okay.
Then there's a whole bunch of stuff in news. Lots and lots of stuff. Lots of DEFCON stuff.
drink
one that sort of made me chuckle a bit. So the DNC, the Democratic National Committee in the US, they released a press statement saying, oh my god, we're being spearfished, But actually, it was a group called, the Nerd Dem or something cool like that, who were testing their own site against phishing attacks, and they forgot to tell headquarters that they were testing themselves. So on the one hand, I think that's a pass, because they were being attacked. It was just by themselves, and they did notice.
That's good.
They shouldn't have gone screaming to the media about it straight away, because now they look like idiots. So it's like, close, but...
Nice try.
Yeah. So it's good news, bad news. In terms of opinion and analysis, there's only one story in that section, but I did sort of put a star next to it because I think it's worth highlighting. So Vanderbilt University, their computer science department, did a study trying to figure out, is there a difference between how much personal data your average Android app sucks up versus your average iOS app? And on average, Android apps suck up 10 times as much personal data as iOS apps. I'm not
really
shocked. Yeah, I'm not shocked.
I am.
Okay.
10 times.
Yeah.
And I wonder what they consider average. I'd like to read this. Sorry. I'd like to read this to see how they did this study, what they determined, how did they decide something was average? How they averaged the data and they must have looked at the same apps doing the same function on two different devices.
Or probably not the same apps. I would be inclined to say you would do something like take the top 1,000 apps and look at them on both platforms. Or
it'd be interesting to see which way they did it.
Yeah. There's lots of ways you could do it, yeah.
Right.
But even if there's a margin of error of 50% on that result, you can't sort of make an order of magnitude go away. So even if it's only twice as much or three times as much, it's still noteworthy to me.
Oh my gosh, look, I just read the second bullet. An idle Android phone running the Chrome browser sends back to Google nearly 50 times as many data requests per hour as an idle iOS phone running Safari.
Yeah.
Holy cannoli.
So there you go. Yeah, I read
chilling.
I quickly read through some of the bullets and it didn't make me go, yeah. Well, it made me go, yeah, I'm not an Android user, but I do that a lot.
That's a good one to keep in the back pocket there.
It is. Wow. There are actually some very noteworthy stuff in Propeller Beanie for the nerds among us. That these are in Propeller Beanie for a reason, right? There's a wonderful how-to from Naked Security for how you can connect up your Android device over USB to put it in that special USB mode and then actually watch which apps are using your microphone and which ones aren't and when they're using it and when they're not. So you can basically figure out if I trust Facebook to use my mic because I want to be able to do messaging through their messaging service, how often does it use the mic? Is it only when I use a messaging service? Does it use the mic at other times? Well, you don't have to take their word for it. You can actually, exactly. But this is proper nerd stuff, right? You're shoving USB cables up the bottom, you're installing software. But it's really nice.
This is why I bought an Android phone. I want to do this.
There you go. So Naked Security have you covered here. Another similar one, there's a new type of denial of service attack that's affecting a whole bunch of web servers. And basically, if you're not careful how you write your regular expressions, you can leave yourself open to a denial of service attack where a bad guy sends stupid, unrealistic strings that are really long in order to intentionally make them hard to process for regular expressions. And if you've written your regular expressions unintelligently, you can have like a 200x slowdown of the processing of websites. Basically, a denial of service attack by regular expression. So there's a whole article explaining, you know, good regular expression, bad regular expression. And there's a little more to it than that, but it's deeply nerdy, but a very cool article. Again, also from Naked Security. They're really on form.
By the way, the Naked Security thing, you have to use Windows to do it.
Well, if it works on Windows 95, my first palate cleanser has your back.
Okay, what do we got there?
It's one of the laws of computer science is that you can simulate one computer on another computer, assuming you're prepared to give up either space or time. But because our computers are, it's sort of like the first law of thermodynamics, right? Ever increasing entropy. So I can simulate something running at 400 gigahertz if my computer's running at 800 gigahertz, whatever. So it's going to be a loss as you simulate. But we are so far advanced from Windows 95 that the loss is irrelevant. So you can now run Windows 95 as an app. So it runs in a window on your Mac or your Windows PC or even your Linux PC, and it is Windows 95 as a self-contained app. So if you're feeling very nostalgic for the original version of Microsoft Solitaire...
Well, that's awesome.
There it is. Or Mines, or whatever it was that you used to waste your time doing. It's right there for you. And then I let you do the last one, because you sent this along. So over to you.
And actually, the one you put in the show notes is the first one, and I actually think the second one was more appropriate to the joke at hand. So as you guys heard in last week's show, I spent an inordinate amount of time writing a script that will save me 15 seconds a week. I think it was 7 hours was the last clock time, and I'm not done with it. Now I want to go do more. And I was on Adam Christensen's The Maccast, and afterwards, Dave Hay, who is at David_Hay, sent us a note. It said, Podfeet is way enthusiastic, and she's definitely on the XKCD scale. And one of the two cartoons he sent was shows a graph, and it's basically the theory of why you would write a program for something. So it shows you that you've got a certain amount of work you're doing, and then writing the code is going to be a lot more work, but then once automation takes over, it's going to reduce your total time, and you can have all this free time. But in reality, you've got a certain level of work. You start writing the code. It takes up a lot of time. You debug. Takes up even more time. You rethink. Then it goes ongoing development, at which point you have no time to do the original task at all.
Yep.
It's pretty funny.
But like I say, you've gone over to the dark side. You're one of us now. Because I can is a very common reason why software gets written. And it's the kind of thing where, well, this saves me 5 mouse clicks, but those 5 mouse clicks are irritating. Whereas that half day I spent learning how to use this cool new JavaScript library, that was fun.
Yeah.
It didn't save me any time, but it was fun.
Exactly. It's a sickness. And I do contend still that the most fascinating thing I've learned about doing programming by stealth is that you never stop when it's working.
Oh, God, no. That's just encouragement to go on.
Yeah, it's like you get this adrenaline rush going, oh, man, it worked. Oh, okay, I'll go to bed. Nope.
This is where the lily gets gilded and then has some diamonds encrusted on it and then gets gilded again to cover up the diamonds.
Until you break it. And then you go to bed. It's like, oh, fudge. Now it doesn't work at all.
And this is why we have source control, because then you can roll back the last working version and then go to bed.
Yeah, I need to get me some of that.
We should do that actually at some stage soon on Programming by Stealth.
I'd like to do that.
One of the most satisfying things to end a work day on is git commit.
Yeah, that would be fun.
You know, git commit, git push, home. Okay, Allison, I do believe we're up to date on all of the insecurity in the tech world for the last 2 weeks.
All right. Well, I was looking forward to it. I knew it was going to be an interesting one with DEF CON and what's the other one?
Black Hat
on. Just want to give everybody else their last two shots.
Just in case there's a sober person left playing the game.
All right. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, Bart.
Indeed. And until then, stay patched and stay secure.
Well, that's going to wind us up for this week. Do not forget to send in your dumb questions, comments, and suggestions by emailing me at allison@podfeet.com. And Linda, yes, I do realize that you sent me 3 or 4 in a row that are really good, and I just haven't gotten to them yet. I have not forgotten, but I have not answered them yet. Anyway, you can follow me on Twitter @podfeet. Remember, anything you're looking for starts with podfeet.com. You want to contribute on Patreon? podfeet.com/Patreon. Want to join our Facebook group? podfeet.com/Facebook. Want to join our Google Plus community? podfeet.com/Google+. Want to join the live chat during the live show? podfeet.com/chat. Want to contribute by using Amazon affiliate links? podfeet.com/Amazon. And if you want to join in the fun of the live show, like Janet did for the first time and Ed did for the first time, very excited to have them both here, head on over to podfeet.com/live. Normally on Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Pacific time, but next week only, it will be on Monday night at 5 p.m. Pacific time. And when you do, you can join the friendly and enthusiastic Nosilla Castaways. Thanks for listening and stay subscribed.